everybody. Welcome back. Jimmy B and Trent. We roll all the way till 6 o'clock. Still to come on the show, Zubin Mahente from ESPN, and then Wolfgang at around 5:35 or so. Trent, look, this we talked a lot about the upsets in college football and also in the NFL. Did it seem to you that now this coming weekend with Iowa and Iowa State, both teams are on the road with Iowa at Northwestern and the Texas Tech game set up now for Iowa State? It just kind of seems just a little empty that it's just going to have to be TV viewing and that's it, not a home game.
Well, I mean, it's not like you go to the games anyway, Jimmy B. I mean, you've never been to Iowa City before.
Oh, stop it.
We haven't. So I don't know why you're all worked up about it not being a game. You know, go.
I just like it be a home game every once in a while. So they should try to figure out where both teams are not on the road at the same time.
That's an awful idea.
That's all.
That's an awful idea.
Okay.
You think the Big Ten and Big 12 are going to get together and figure out a way to make Iowa and Iowa State? Come on. Live in reality with me, Jimmy.
No, they never will. They never will. They never will. They never will do that.
Reality.
I know that.
Yes, yes. Come live with me. It's fun. It's fun living in reality.
I like to live in Jimmy B world.
I know you do. I know you do. So you had an awful weekend with your picks.
I did.
You're sitting there. You're watching the clones. You're not going to go out in the rain and watch that. We know that all too well. Jimmy B,
that
can't
is true.
Be bothered with that. Did you stick around to the end of the Iowa State game? Because I'll be honest, I didn't. I did not see Zeb Nolan out there. Have it on DVR. I'm going to go back tonight, I think, and at least watch his snaps and see him a little bit. But, yeah, I couldn't stick around for the end of that one. Boy, is Kansas bad.
Oh, they're terrible. Absolutely a terrible, terrible football team. I did see Trevor Ryan's return, though, and I did see the monster block that took place in that game. And I think Trevor Ryan was a special teams player in the Big 12 for the week. So congratulations to him. Look, this is a team in Iowa State that after they won at Oklahoma, it wasn't that I thought that they would lose to Kansas. You know, they'd all have big heads, things like that. How great you are on campus all week. I never felt that about the game. But, Trent, I didn't expect them to shut out Kansas just because Kansas, for the most part, we felt that they could score. They've scored against other teams, and we just felt that they would put points on the board. It was painfully obvious, almost from the very end of the first quarter, that Kansas did not even have an interest in being there. Would have just rather have just gotten on the bus and gone home.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Absolutely. You don't expect a team to be that bad. You know Kansas is bad, but until you see them play a team that you know well, you don't expect that. And like you said, you know, they've scored before, but they got down early in the rain after the delay. Yeah, it didn't even look like they wanted to be there, Jimmy B. So we talked about the path for Iowa State getting to 6, the possibility of game day coming to town. And yes, it is a possibility.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put it at, you know, anything better than maybe 15-20%, but I think there's a real possibility. Become USC fans this week. Your uniforms look the same, so it'll be easy to root for them, Iowa State fan. This weekend, you want USC to beat Notre Dame because there's a chance Notre Dame hosts NC State that Saturday. That's one of the few good games that are on the slate that you can see game day going to. And maybe they'll do something ridiculous again and go somewhere off the beaten path. James Madison this weekend. Jim, I know, you know, moving around, going different places. They went to New York City the one weekend where a lot of people felt maybe they'd be heading to Iowa City. I'll be honest, I don't like it. It was fun the first time they went to Fargo. Okay, that's enough. It was fun the first time they went to James Madison, but I'm over it. You know, go where the big games are. I personally don't want to be a curmudgeon about it, but I've seen enough. Go to where the big college game is. That's what I want to see at the FBS level. I'm sorry. I know you and I, all these, but it just doesn't do it for me. It just doesn't.
But don't they do that, though, for inclusion in college football? Look, it's 1AA or FCS, and they don't play in the same size of stadiums. They don't get the national media exposure. Maybe is that their way of ESPN because ESPN has gobbled up all of those football contracts, Trent, and they run them on ESPN3. So if that's the case, do you think that they're like throwing the dog a bone?
No.
Is that it?
No. No.
Okay.
I don't.
All right.
It's a money-making enterprise, and I'm sure that there is more to be gained from having it at a big place that you'd be used to as opposed to a place like that. I don't know. It annoyed me a little bit on Saturday watching it. And I'll be frank, yeah, I didn't watch as much of it as I normally do because of that. I'm like, I don't care. I really don't.
Okay.
Maybe that's just me. I don't know. But Ames, that would be incredible to see them there. One of the few places they haven't been, Jimmy B. I believe there's mm-hmm. 8 or 9 Power 5 conference places they haven't been before. And Ames is one of them. Kansas is the other, I believe, in the Big 12. They haven't been to Washington State, haven't been to Cal before. I think they've been everywhere in the SEC, a couple places in
the ACC.
Have
they been everywhere in the Big 10?
They have been everywhere except for Illinois. And Indiana doesn't count. They were there for that Thursday, but not for a true game day. So that would be the two.
Oh, I got you.
They haven't been to Rutgers, for crying out loud, but haven't been to Illinois. So, yeah, just cross another one off the list and become a USC fan for the weekend. That's what you want, Cyclone fans.
That's you know, you need that because that would, and, of course, it would have to be coupled with a win on the road at Texas Tech.
Yes.
But if they go into Lubbock, oh, the garden spot of actually it's like the armpit of the world. But at anything, it is a winnable game for Iowa State. It is winnable. I mean, this is like a coin flip type game. And Texas Tech got out of the blocks quickly, looked like they were playing pretty well, and then they've kind of fallen a little bit on hard times. Now, they've played good teams. They've lost to Oklahoma State, and they lost to West Virginia. So has Iowa State, I guess the key question will be, if the Cyclones go in and win at Lubbock against Texas Tech, a team that we know can put a lot of points on the board, and Iowa State's defense handles them to the point of only allowing, say, 25, 28, something like that. Now, what are you saying, and wins the game? Now, what are you saying about Iowa State and the way that they've been able to, you know, tweak that defense to, mm-hmm. we always thought the offense could score, Trent. We always felt that they could be in games because they did have offensive weapons, but we didn't think that about their defense.
No. I you know, with all the new guys over there, we talked about landing in the summer, but it was up front, you know, with Ray Lima, who has been just an absolute stud out there. You know, Lima has been one of the biggest, I think, changes of this team defensively is what he's been able to do up front. And a guy like Vernell Trent, who was a nice player, you know, he was solid, but he's really come into his own this year. Jaquan Bailey out there, you know, he's been making plays, and people remember, you know, what he did against Texas doing the little somersault after he made the big play and got the penalty. But up front, they look like a completely different team. That goes with what I said, Jim. You know, with this team, they just look different. And even playing Kansas, they look like a real Big 12 outfit, something different than what we've seen in the past. Your chance to win $4,000 a day right now. All you have to do is text GAIN to 62582. 62582, text GAIN right now. Your chance to win $4,000 a day from Cumulus.
The Kansas City Chiefs play here. 1700 KBGG.
If you're sick and tired of the same old delivery options, I have an idea for you. It's Food Dudes Delivery. Food Dudes Delivery delivers for restaurants that normally don't deliver food. And with over 50 restaurants across the metro, Food Dudes Delivery can find whatever you're craving. And for listeners of Jimmy B and TC, $2 off any order of $20 or more. Just use the coupon code JBTC. That's JBTC for $2 off your next order of $20 or more. Food Dudes Delivery. Online, Food Dudes Delivery.
Welcome back, everybody. We continue all the way till 6 o'clock. Zub Mehenta is our guest right now, ESPN. He comes to us on the Draft House 50 Hotline, Mills Civic Parkway in West Des Moines. Zubin, look, it's always a good day when we have a chance to have a conversation with you. But at ESPN, after all of the major college football upsets that took place Friday and Saturday. Is this what ESPN was hoping for, hoping to get a lot of chaos with the top four teams?
I just think it's gotten to the point where through the first 3 years it's been so unpredictable. It's just hard to say. I think the more unpredictable it is, the better it is for everyone, like guys like us, guys like you, in terms of the chatter. I mean, look, the first playoff had Ohio State losing to a Virginia Tech team at home early. They ended up winning the title. And then you've obviously got the Clemson-Alabama story the last 2 years. But I don't think there's a lot of people that thought Washington was going to end up making it through last year, and they did. Obviously, the Penn State situation last year, the Big 12 situation in 2014. So I can't speak for everyone, but I would generally say that if you're in the media, whether you're televising the playoff like ESPN or guys like yourself that talk about it because you have two teams in the FBS, my general assumption would be the more chaos, the better, because I think it really, really leads up to a crescendo moment. Now, obviously, you know, you're going to have some disappointment, whether it was the Big 12 in 2014 or Penn State fans when last year's announcement came down. But I generally think for the sport as a whole, more chaos is better. More chaos leads to more discussion. More discussion leads to more interest. More interest leads to better ratings. Better ratings lead to more advertising. So I just tend to think the chaos is good. Because to be quite honest with you, I don't know if there's going to be a year where the teams will be clear-cut 1-4, Jim. But even if they are to most people, there will always be that fifth fan base out there that's not happy. So if we're going to get to a point where nobody's happy with the four teams, might as well just make it the case where nobody's happy at all. Because if nobody's happy at all, minus the four teams that got in, it probably shows that people really do care, and the evolution of the playoff to basically satiate everyone's desire to care and get on board with their team was probably ending up being worth it. There was a lot of people that weren't sure how the playoff was going to be reacted to, but I think most people would agree that obviously, like the second wild card in baseball, things that you just didn't really know how they would affect the sport at large, it generally, I think, has been a huge hit.
Zubin Mehente joining us, ESPN. Zubin, the college weekend was crazy. The NFL weekend was crazy. Upsets all over the place. Atlanta jumps out to a 17-0 lead, falls to the Dolphins, and it all culminated with the Broncos losing to the Giants. The NFL, a nuts weekend for that as well. And who's good? It's a question I've been pondering. No Aaron Rodgers now. Who's left that's good in this league?
I'll tell you, the one team that I'm, and again, this is not a great particular example to stand on, but the team that I think is underrated, like, I'm not kidding. I mean, people think people would laugh at this, but if I was making a top five list of teams in the NFL right now, I think usual suspects would be there, right? I guess you'd have to put the Eagles on there. People are, once again, now buying in on the Pats. I'm not sure if they really ever gave up on the Pats, but they just wanted to see a little bit more. Yesterday got a little dicey, obviously, too. Where do you put Kansas City? But the one team I don't think a lot of people would have on their top five, and I don't know if you guys would have them on your individual list, but I'm telling you what, and I'm not gonna say an epic win over the Cleveland Browns is going to be the reason I put somebody in the top five. Mm-hmm. But, man, I think the Houston Texans are really, really good. Ever since Deshaun had that duel with Brady and lost, since then they put up 57 points in a game. Yesterday, just another reminder that the Browns continue to pick the wrong people time after time after time. They found out firsthand.
Yep.
You know, Dabo Sweeney once famously said about Deshaun Watson, and again, you know, this guy, Dabo Sweeney, the kind of guy that's going to support his guys all the time, and that's what people love about him. But he famously said before the selection of the draft, he said, if you pass on Deshaun Watson, this will like be passing on Michael Jordan. And again, that's a great quote. That's going to get everybody's attention. You think about that. You think about Akeem. You think about Sambu. You think about Michael Jordan. And it's like, okay, wow, that's some sort of quote. But I'm not saying he's going to be Michael Jordan of the NFL. But he has adjusted so well, and nothing rattles him. Again, I'm not equating the college football playoff title game the last 2 years to playing in an NFL playoff game. But the stage never seems too big for him. They won the division in back-to-back years with extremely mediocre quarterback play. Extremely mediocre quarterback play, and there's still enough to win the division in back-to-back years. Granted, Andrew Luck being hurt helped out a little bit for Houston. But that's a team, while everybody's talking about, you know, Alex Smith turning into Alex Smith, and maybe the Bears actually showing a little bit of life, what's happened to the Ravens, and look at how the fortunes have changed for the Steelers over the course of the last 7 or 8 days. I know the Jets better than people thought. I think the one team not getting a lot of attention that I think deserves it is Houston.
Interesting. Zub Mehente is our guest right here on the Draft House 50 Hotline. The big news also came on Sunday for Colin Kaepernick. He has filed a lawsuit against the National Football League claiming collusion. Look, the Green Bay Packers were in desperate need of a quarterback. Zubin, they went out and signed a Division III guy. Kaepernick now, he is totally doomed from the NFL, correct?
Yeah, it seems hard to imagine that I think the Packers, under any circumstances, were going to make that move. I don't personally know or have ever interviewed Ted Thompson, but I've watched him from afar for a long time. That just doesn't seem like a Ted Thompson move. It just doesn't. They're a very conservative, and I don't mean politically conservative. I just think they're a very conservative organization in terms of how they scout and develop. They've never been a huge player in the free agent market. They're a draft and develop team, and it's hard to argue with their results or Ted Thompson's results. They have a very conservative linear approach that they go with, and that's who they're going to go with. So when Aaron Rodgers went down, I think Troy Aikman even said Tony Romo. I think there may have been something going on. They're a little tete-a-tete there. Obviously, Colin Kaepernick's name was brought up right away, but I just think the way that the Packers have operated over the years, and again, when you're lucky enough to go from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers, you don't have to think about these things too often, unlike other teams like Cleveland, as we referenced, that's been dying for a quarterback, or Houston, who now appears to have a quarterback. I just didn't think the Packers were going to do it. I'm not a legal expert, but from the legal experts I've been listening to and our plugged-in NFL people, like our insider Jim Trotter, our legal analyst Ryan Smith, Michael McCann, who's a great Sports Illustrated legal analyst who we've had on SportsCenter before, I'm just going to tell you what they're saying, and that is it seems just nearly impossible for him to be able to prove that was the case, that either two teams colluded in cahoots with one another or the league as a whole has said that is the case. I don't think he has much of a chance to win according to our experts. I'm just regurgitating what they're saying because they're very well-versed. Also, the timing to do this, basically 2 days before the NFL owners' meetings in New York, when obviously one of those 32 owners would have to eventually sign off on you becoming the face of the franchise. The timing is interesting. I'm not sure if it's coincidental or interesting, or maybe it is totally coincidental, or maybe he feels that it's just high time to do it after the Packers situation, or the best way to get attention would be to do it when the NFL owners are all convening in one place at one time. That's a possibility, too. But I just think that the Packers were never going to make that sort of move. I'm not begrudging them. I'm not endorsing them. It just doesn't seem like the type of move that the organization would make or ever has made. They don't make rash decisions like that. They believe in the people that they have. Obviously, Brett Hundley and this Callahan kid, it doesn't invoke a ton of inspiration, but it is what it is. But I think at the same time, the tactic he has taken, at least from what I hear from our legal analysts at ESPN and other outlets, it seems like a very long shot to prove what he's attempting to prove here.
So baseball tonight, Zubin, we'll see if the Yankees can make this a series against the Houston Astros. I see the lineups are out, and Aaron Judge will be batting second again. What is Girardi doing here? Isn't this the time where you lay off the youngster a little bit, move him down in the lineup instead of put him in that two-hole, 19 strikeouts and 31 postseason at-bats?
It's a tough spot because I always look at Aaron Judge at the number 100, right? 100 walks, impressive. 100 strikeouts. I'm 100 plus we're talking, by the way. 100 plus walks, impressive. 100 plus strikeouts, not impressive. 100 plus RBIs, impressive. I go back to the 100 plus strikeouts, that's a lot. Anybody that hits as many home runs as he does, there's a lot of feast or famine and guys like that. But I think Girardi has a lot of confidence in him. And just from the comments that he made over the weekend, basically saying that, look, we were down 2-0 in a series where we had absolutely no margin of error. We were down 2-0 in a best of five. And so I don't think he's particularly concerned at this particular juncture. If you look at the record, the Yankees, I looked at this the other day. There's so much talk about Cleveland and there's so much talk about Houston. The Yankees had an excellent home record. Excellent home record. I know people thought, oh, they're a little ahead of schedule, this, that, whatever. But, they put inspired baseball at home this season. So I think that could help. And I think the other thing to really keep in mind in a situation like this is we ran this stat yesterday. This is pretty surprising. The last team to overcome multiple 2-0 deficits in the postseason was 32 years ago. So there has not been a single team in the baseball playoffs in the last 32 years that has overcome a 2-0 series deficit twice. Now, that's exactly what the Yankees are facing at this moment. So take that little piece of history into consideration when you think about the series.
Zubin, then let me go to the other series where the defending World Series champion Chicago Cubs are now down 2-0 to the Los Angeles Dodgers. Where are you on this series? Do the Cubs rebound at Wrigley, or are the Dodgers just the best team? That's it.
It's hard to tell, only because the thing that really makes me a little bit skittish about Los Angeles, besides the notion that I think their bullpen has been pretty good, and obviously yesterday was just a moment for the ages, but sometimes those things happen. They're due. I mean, the Cubs are at 108 years. 30 years doesn't seem like much by comparison. But the Dodgers did win the most games in baseball despite that 11-game skid. And obviously that's coming to fruit. But I would say the one thing I'm really concerned about, not really concerned about, but I am concerned about if I was a Dodger fan, is, and the numbers do say in terms of splits that he is a different pitcher in the postseason versus the regular season. The playoffs are the playoffs. It is magnified. I watched both Clayton Kershaw starts in the postseason. I really wasn't impressed by either of them. They got really bailed out. He gave up in his first postseason start. It completely went under the radar. But he gave up 4 home runs in his first postseason start. Now, Arizona, I believe all 4 of them, if I'm not mistaken, were solo home runs. So it didn't end up costing them huge. But he gave up 4 home runs in his first postseason start. I think he's like the only guy to do that and get a win. And I don't think he was that great over the weekend. I think he was much better than he was against Arizona. I'm not saying that he's going to continue to struggle, but keep in mind, after Corey Kluber got roughed up the first time, when they went to game 5, people said, Kluber doesn't have bad back-to-back starts. He's not going to have bad back-to-back starts, and he did. I'm just a little bit concerned about Clayton Kershaw, because it's not just this year. If you go look at his postseason numbers, they have really been starkly different than the regular season, especially the amount of home runs hit. He's giving up about twice as many home runs per 9 than he gave up in the regular campaign. That's alarming to me. I still think the Dodgers are loaded. I think the Cubs have a lot of fight in them. But if I'm a Dodgers fan and I'm expecting this guy to go out and deal for me, he hasn't done it yet in multiple postseason starts.
Zubin, always good catching up with you. Enjoy the sports tonight. Enjoy a day off. And I know you're going to be locked and loaded. Colts-Titans tonight.
Yes, as I told you earlier, cannot wait till we get to Broncos-Chiefs at the end of the month. But then again, after watching the Broncos last night, I'm not sure I'm fired up for that either.
Good stuff. Thanks,
thank
as always, Zubin.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Zubin Mehta, ESPN, right here on the Draft House 50 Hotline. Always great stuff out of him, Trent.
Always love that conversation. Zubin, see him all the time on ESPN. Boy, that guy works hard.
Yeah. He starts at like 9 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, and he's still there at midnight. So there, I mean, he does some long shifts. There's no question about that. And we caught him today on his day off, which made it even nicer. He was, very coherent. Wasn't like we woke him up from a sleep or something. So that was great for us.
Well, we'll take the time out here. When we come back on the other side, Wolfgang will join us. We'll talk some Hawks, some clones, and whatever else comes up as we take you up until 6 o'clock. It's Jimmy B and TC on 1700 KBGG. Welcome back, Jimmy B and TC here. 1700 KBGG with you until 6 o'clock tonight. Jimmy B moves away. We bring in our man Wolfgang. Talk some Hawks, some Cyclones, football, basketball, maybe a little baseball. We'll see what's rattling around in the mind of Wolfgang today. What's happening, my man?
Not much. How you doing? That bye weeks always kind of stink, but I got a little bit of taste of the Hawkeyes with watching my boy TJB. Play for the 49ers. I had heard at half that he was starting the second half, so I got to watch the entire second half, man, and I was pumped. Did you get to see any of it?
Just the highlights is all I saw. Never made it over there. Since the Vikings and Packers were on, the wife had control of the remote as a big Vikings fan, so she was not interested in me flipping over and watching C.J. Beathard. She said, no, we are watching this, and we're watching Aaron Rodgers. With the broken collarbone go out. She was very pleased about that, as I was, as a Bears fan.
Man.
But, Wolfgang, so C.J. Beathard, what do you think?
I never said this on the radio to you, so this is just me being honest with you. I did write a whole, 3 to 4 articles for Hawkeye Nation about CJB, and I was basically calling him my boyfriend. So people like to get on me about that. They refer to CJB as my boyfriend for the rest of the season because I loved him. I always thought he was better than Rudock. I saw the potential. I saw that he was going to make the NFL. But to be honest here, I did not see him ever being a starter in the NFL. Did I see him having a Ricky Stanzi-like career where he's a backup and he makes good money playing football? I did see that. I did not see him becoming a starter in the NFL, and not only a starter in the NFL, in game 5 or game 6, he's going to be starting against the Dallas Cowboys. And I got to watch a lot of it. I know tons of people don't have the NFL ticket, and I tuned in. I was pumped. I finally got a favorite team now, Trent. I'll be watching the 49ers like crazy. But I thought he looked good. It's the same stuff we saw at him. You underestimate his arm at times, but then he'll go, whoa, okay, I saw something there. And I was reading some national articles on him and said, yeah, you know, most people pegged him at 5th or 6th round, but he had a good senior day. They liked his arm. It was better than expected. It's funny that some of these people didn't realize that he could run because he had a nice little run yesterday. I don't know what it was, 12, 13 yards. He acted like he was going to go out of bounds just past the first down marker, then got another 6, 7, or 8. It was great. And we're used to seeing that. So it's funny when the guys that we know, and it's their job to do their homework, don't know that he has wheels like that. Maybe they didn't because he was hurt. But he made some nice throws. He had probably 3 to 4 drops, 2 of them by Kittle, for crying out loud. Can you help your buddy out, Trent?
Yeah, that'd be good. So you're disappointed in George Kittle, huh?
He made a nice catch. Had a few good blocks. But yeah, he dropped it. Well, I saw one of them was bad. I mean, he went off the sideline, was cussing at himself, and I suppose he was hard as anybody on himself. And then he had another drop. The interception at the end of the game was absolutely not his fault. But if you watch the 49ers now, and I'm going to try to become an expert on the 49ers, their offensive line does not look good, like they block well. It looked good enough yesterday, to be honest with you. I'm not an expert with the Washington Redskins defensive line, so I don't know what they were going up there. But it looked okay yesterday. I heard that the 49er offensive line pass protection is not good. Their number one receiver, Pierre Garçon, the Indianapolis Colts guy back in the day.
Sure.
That's their number one wide receiver, Trent. You tell me, okay? I follow the NFL. There can't be a worse number one wide receiver on any team in the NFL.
Oh, yes, there is.
If it is, tell me who it is.
Oh, yes, there is. Yes, there is.
Okay. How many? How many teams have a worse one?
Oh, I don't know how many, but I know that there is no doubt the Chicago Bears' number one receiver is worse than him.
Because now, they've had a lot of injuries. I don't think the 49ers have.
I don't know. I don't break down the 49ers game in and game out. I do know the Bears are stinking awful at the wide receiver spot. Kendall Wright, I guess, might be their number one. I mean, speaking of that, so yesterday the Bears get the victory. Guess how many catches there were from the wide receivers?
Yeah, because I do like, I'm freezing on the rookie's name.
Mitchell Trubisky.
Yeah, thank you, Trubisky. I've watched 2 of his games. I do like him. The last game I saw was that Monday Night Football or Sunday Night Football. Nobody was helping him out, Trent, at all.
Monday Night
Football.
Yep.
That started that game, he played phenomenal. Some of those throws to the sideline were great, and then there would be a penalty or a hold or something. He got totally screwed. But, yeah, his stats yesterday, he barely, what did he get, like 118 yards? And I don't, was it 9 of 18? Something like that. So he couldn't have had many to the wide receiver, right?
Only one wide receiver had a catch. It was Kendall Wright, 2 for 36. Every other pass was to tight ends or running backs.
Are they going to that guy a lot out of the backfield or no?
Cohen had a catch. He also had a touchdown pass, which was awesome.
Yes, I did see that. Yep.
Yeah, Tariq Cohen. The little guy, you're right, from NC A&T. And, the Bears win. The Bears win. But, yes, there is a team that has worse wide receivers than the 49ers.
Well, we can bring that in for Bears fans, Trent. You're putting a rookie starter in here, and who's he got to throw to, right?
Right.
Who did Trubisky have to throw to? And some of those throws were so pimp and so great, and sometimes you can't just look at the win and loss. Because if you actually watched it, there were penalties that brought back sensational passes
not this last game, I didn't see it, but the game before. Sometimes, a lot of times, you just look at the statistics. It doesn't show everything because he would have had a better game. They were scoring a drive, and they were just absolutely killing him. And that's what the 49ers are going to have to do, and that's what Pierre Garçon said. We got to help this guy out. He came in. He was calm, just like we all saw during the Iowa game. He's just got a look about him, a quiet confidence that brings people in. You could tell his teammates like him. His coach is all but saying, this guy, nothing is too big for this guy. He has a quiet confidence about himself. And for anybody that hasn't seen the clips, there is clips out of there of pretty much every throw that he did yesterday. And they're not all great, but it's pretty good for a freaking first-time starter that didn't know he was going to start. And, oh, yeah, Trent, PJB did not get first, like he was starter snaps the whole week. It's like, a kid, go in, get in there. Seriously? I mean, I'm glad they did it. There's not much pressure on the guy to succeed when you're only getting a couple series during practice. Now he gets some practice. He knows what to improve on. He knows what to see. He sees the speed of the game. And it's fun as a Hawkeye fan or as a UNI fan. David Johnson, if you're a UNI fan or a fan of anybody in Iowa, it's so much fun to watch him. But at Iowa, we haven't got too many skill position players where we can sit there and go, ooh, I'm going to go watch that game because we got a stud wide receiver. Tim Dwight back in the day. I always did that. But as far as skill position, Dallas Clark, I think he broke the record for receptions one year as a tight end. He was fun to watch, and obviously Peyton Manning. But if you look at beyond that, not a ton of skill talent at all out there. Sean Green didn't have a great career. He had an okay career. Mm-hmm. But if you get a quarterback, this is going to be so much fun as a Hawkeye fan and something we're not used to. Going back to Mark Vlasic, what was that year? How many games did he start? Was it for the Chargers? Yeah. I barely remember it, and it wasn't even on TV, Trent.
Right. He started 4 games in his career. It's funny you mentioned that because I looked it up. Started, 3 games with San Diego, 1 his final year with the Chiefs in 1991. The last Hawkeye quarterback to start a game in the NFL, Mark Vlasic, 1991. So the long 26 years in between starts in the NFL for a Hawkeye quarterback, and that will end coming up with the 49ers next game.
I mean, and Iowa fans know good quarterback play. We've had good quarterbacks, maybe just not NFL guys. We had the Hartley, obviously, was a stud. Chuck Long made the NFL. How many games he started, I don't remember. I feel like his first throw as a Detroit Lion was a touchdown pass. I'm not sure on that. You back that up with Vlasic. Then you got Hartley. You got McGuire for a year, who ends up going to San Diego State, makes the NFL. We had Drew Tate, he's still going in the Canadian League, right? Then we've got Brad Banks, second in the Heisman. Then we've got CJB, who now looks like he's at least going to get a shot to play in the NFL. You had Jake Rudock for a couple years. He's a backup. May get some time, sooner or later. Iowa fans have seen good quarterback play, maybe just not guys that are good enough to start in the NFL.
And that might be changing. Jake Rudock, maybe a snap away from playing for the Lions if they can't keep Stafford upright. Yeah, it's changing. Does Iowa have another one in Nate Stanley? Do you see that kind of upside? Because, frankly, I do. Big body, can move, strong arm. He's got work to do. There's no doubt he's just a true sophomore. I absolutely think, though, that he could have a shot of being a next-level quarterback. Am I crazy?
No, I don't think you're crazy. He's obviously got the arm, and you know those guys, in my opinion, favor that too much. I think quarterbacks obviously have to be able to make the throws in the NFL. The defenses are so much quicker, and they disguise stuff at such a higher threshold. But does he have the potential? Yeah, he absolutely does. With his arm, his size, his weight, his strength, he's going to have to become more of a leader. He's going to have to show more touch. But we're talking about a second-year sophomore here. So if I'm projecting his career out right now, Nathan Stanley, gun to my head, is the guy going to make the NFL? Yes. Do I ever think he'll be a starter? Probably the percentages are against that. Mm-hmm. But why couldn't he be a Stanzi? Why couldn't he be a CJB? Why couldn't he be the kid in Iowa State that made such a long career that I think he's out now for the last 2 years, but Sage Rosenfeld. Why couldn't he be somebody like that? I see potential in him. He's got way more potential than Sage Rosenfeld had.
So you're in. You're in. You don't think I'm crazy. I like that.
No, you're not crazy at all. And we haven't seen his mobility quite enough yet. I think if he just finally decides to go, it'll be interesting. Because I do like quarterbacks that maybe that isn't necessarily their thing, like CJB, when they don't expect it and they go, wow. You know, CJB had a 65, something like that, yard touchdown run in the preseason. It was crazy. And John Lynch, his general manager, was in the booth on TV just giggling. They're like, yeah, we knew he was fast. We knew he had something like that. We didn't know he had that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Hawkeye fans are going, yeah, when he's healthy, when he doesn't have a hernia or a broken back or a, you know what I mean? He was getting killed and he just was never healthy. But anybody that watched some of those games knew that he had that. So it'll be interesting to see if Stanley can, when things break down, maybe take off and run and get us some yards and slide down. Don't get hurt. But, you know, mostly what we want quarterbacks doing is running, do the Aaron Rodgers things where they run to look downfield. They continue to have their eyes downfield and look for the big, big game. That's kind of mostly what we want. But it's a killer. You know that, Trent. When we go up against Ohio State, it's going to kill us when Barrett does that crap. It just is a killer. You've got everybody covered, and then they do that. It's just, you know, so, I mean, if it kills us, we should do a little bit of that with them. And obviously, we don't have a guy with crazy 4-5 speed, but he's got enough speed, I think. Feeling this.
So it's Northwestern after the bye week. The Wildcats get it done against Maryland. Would you rather have Northwestern coming in off a win or off a loss?
Yeah, psychologically, yeah, you kind of want them. That's a good question. That is a good question. I don't know. I just try to root for the people that are ahead of, because I want them to get as many losses as they can. The Northwesterns, the Wisconsins. I root again. I just want them to lose. But I know what you're saying. Had they lost that, would they have given up on the season? Had Northwestern lost that game, would they have given up on the season? Now they win. Things aren't over. Bowl season eligibility is still there to have a decent season. If you're asking me, which would I rather have? No, I want them to lose. I want them to maybe be down. But you know Fitzgerald. He'll just find a way to just piss them off and tell them how arrogant we are and make up stories about Hayden Fry. So I don't know. I'm not sure it matters. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm kind of the same line of thinking. I mean, you can make arguments on both sides. I've seen enough football where I don't think it matters. I think it's something to talk about and maybe fill a little bit of time, but that's about it. I'm kind of with
you. But I do not, Trent, I do not want you guys saying Northwestern is no good. Northwestern is no good. Okay, they will be good against Iowa, right? Can we agree on that?
Oh, of course. Of course.
We're not going to blow them out. They're going to give us everything they have. And when I talk about these teams or in basketball or everything, when I say there's effort, there's 110% effort where you're just going at it crazy, and then there's just effort. There is another 10%, 15% that you can get out of people with focus, with energy, with a team that you don't like, and they don't like us. And you will see that. They will come ready to play. So a win against Northwestern is a pretty good win for Iowa. Maybe they're down this year. Maybe it's not a good win for other teams. But anytime Iowa beats Fitzgerald and Northwestern, I'm not going to poo-poo that win.
No, not at all. I'm right there with you. We wrap it up here, Wolfgang, with a little look at Iowa State. A win against Kansas. Kansas is brutal. I mean, there's no doubt about it. That's a bad, bad football team. But the way that they manhandled him and physically dominated that game, I'm not used to seeing that out of Iowa State. They'll win games, but the physical domination that they had, that was impressive.
No, and we were talking on Friday, I believe. Yeah, because we're going Monday, Friday now. And you had kind of brought up, which isn't a bad take at all, that, you know, you've heard this before. You know, Iowa State's supposed to win. They should win. I mean, how could they not win? And you kind of brought that up. I think you said, was it 2014? I think Iowa State lost to Kansas. And I get it. You have to come to play everybody. Mm-hmm. But if this is the Iowa State team that I think this may be, I wasn't worried. Am I saying there was a 0% chance of Kansas winning? No. But I just did not feel like that was going to happen. Iowa State just looks different to me right now. I think aren't they like 28th in the AP poll right now? I mean, they're getting respect nationally. They have more votes in the AP right now, I believe, than Iowa does. Okay? And Iowa beat them, and they both have the same, you know, I believe the same amount of losses. So, you know, I give Iowa State credit, because that's what you do when you make the turn as a program. You do what you're supposed to do when you're supposed to do it, where you're supposed to do it, whatever. It doesn't matter. Get the job done, and they did. There was, I mean, it was a laugher. I thought Kansas looked absolutely pathetic. I thought they were a high school team. Give credit to Iowa State on that and on numerous fronts there. But they did what they were supposed to do, and they didn't even give up any points at all. So I don't know how we come negative and look at it. But, Trent, what I love, and I can't remember what was the other game, the UNI game maybe or something anyway, where Iowa State fans easily won the game, and they're not happy.
Mm-hmm.
They beat Kansas 45-love, and you got people still talking, nope, we got to prove here. I'm not used to hearing that. That means I love it. That's an expectation base. That's a fan base that has risen their expectations. In my opinion, that's good. I mean, we don't want them booing if they're not getting first down and all that, but they are expecting more. And then you'll see around the country in any sport, the fan base that raises their expectations, eventually, usually, those teams will end up reaching that. So we'll see what happens. But props to Iowa State. They did what they were supposed to do, and they did it beyond that. What was the point spread? 20, was it 21, something like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it went off at about 23, in fact.
Okay, so 45. I mean, and Iowa State fans still aren't happy. I love it. I think that's a turn of the program that knows what they have and knows what they have in the future, and that's exciting.
Absolutely, coming a long ways. Wolfgang, maybe a little basketball talk. We got Media Day happening today in Iowa City. We'll get into a little college basketball on Friday. How's that sound?
Sounds beautiful to me, man. Yeah, because Media Day. Right, today?
Yeah, happening today. So we talk a little bit about that, and we'll get ready for the stories that come out. We both believe a good Iowa team this year, no doubt, though. Maybe better than regionally and certainly nationally people think. I'm continually baffled about the number of people out there, Wolfgang, that don't even have this as an NCAA tournament team. My buddy Shelby Mast, he does the brackets for USA Today. He came out with his latest bracket on Friday. He didn't have the Hawkeyes in. I don't know. I know we talked about this a bit this summer, but boy, it just seems like maybe we're too close to it. I don't know, because something certainly here, and not just with fans of the team, but even the media, the people that cover them game in and game out, you know, the Scott Dockermans of the world, they all believe this team's going to be better. Are we too close to it? Something seems off.
You know, we should talk about that on Friday, and we should probably try to take the bracketologists side and put them, you know, let's get in their shoes and see what they're seeing. Are we too close? But a lot of these guys you're mentioning, they're not homers. Do they want Iowa to succeed? Absolutely, because they cover them. But, I mean, you're mentioning guys that they're not homers. And I don't think you're not a homer. I mean, you love Iowa. You can probably label me a homer if you want. I usually err on the side of an extra win versus an extra loss. That's fine. But maybe we should put our shoes in some of these people, see what they're seeing. Is it just as simple as Peter Jock not being there? The stud score. Okay, let's look at that. Try to find out, instead of just bashing them, let's maybe put ourselves in their shoes and see what they're seeing.
Wolfgang joining us here on the program, on the Draft House 50 Hotline. Wolfgang, have a good week. We will talk to you again on Friday.
All right, see you Friday, Trent. Later.
That is Wolfgang. Always love talking with him. And that'll do it. We got Monday Night Football coming up here this evening. Of course, Game 3 of the ALCS also happening. Westwood One, though, has the coverage every Thursday night, Sunday night, and Monday night football game right here on 1700 KBGG. Plug your nose and well, it's football, I guess, right? Colts, Titans tonight. Woof, woof, woof. And what can you say? That'll do it for the program today. Thanks to everybody out there for listening in. We'll be back with you again tomorrow. Starting at noon, the Ken Miller Show with Trent Condon here from noon until 2, and then Jimmy B and TC from 4 until 6 o'clock. Your home for real sports talk for real sports fans, 1700 KBGG.